So thank you. I will be presenting on the development of For Our Sons, which is a parent education program for parents of young black males. For Our Sons is part of a project called Healthy Futures. That is a multi-year parent education intervention being done in New York City with 8 public schools, working with 6th through 9th graders to promote healthy decision making. And this work is supported by a grant from National Institute of Child Health and Human Development. So I too have no disclosures. Let me begin by providing a little bit of background for the work that we do. So we know that parents often underestimate the influence that they have on their children as children become teenagers. Yet there is mounting evidence about the importance of positive parenting practices for supporting adolescents, especially as peer involvement and peer pressure increases. We also know that parents would like more information that recognizes their primary role as caregivers in supporting their children through adolescence. And some research suggests that parental influence may indeed serve as a protective factor for adolescent girls, and that gender-specific messages and parenting tips may also be relevant for and effective for males. And yet those of us over the last decade, those of us who are doing work in school settings, find ourselves faced with increased barriers due to resource limitations, restrictions on time, conflicts, controversies around sexual health. And so our work is also done in the context of early sexual initiation. We have done some research, a previous research study, which suggests that we tracked over 100 males and females, and we followed them from 7th grade through high school. And we found that early sexual initiation, as you all know, and as was reported by an earlier presenter, is indeed linked to multiple sex partners, unprotected sex, being drunk during sex, substance use problems, et cetera. And then when we resurveyed these young people into young adulthood when they were 19 to 20 years old, we also found that sex before high school continued to be related to continued increase in sexual risks, pregnancy, parenthood, problems with alcohol and other drugs, and intimate partner violence. So the foundational research that led to the development of the programs that I'm going to describe today, this foundational research then led to the development of our approach to gender targeted, culturally relevant parent education. And our work takes into account that while positive parenting practices are associated with reduced adolescent risk-taking for both males and females, we know that there are some marked differences between how parents parent girls and how they parent boys. And so we wanted to address these parenting differences for girls and boys in the Healthy Futures Project. And so that led to the development of For Our Sons. So let me just briefly provide an overview of some of the parenting programs that precede For Our Sons. And so you see here, Saving Sex for Later, which was the initial set of CDs that we developed, audio CDs that were developed for both parents of boys and girls. And it's a set of 3 CDs narrated by John Amos. Any of you recognize him there. It was tested in a randomized controlled trial with over 800 families of 5th and 6th graders in New York City and shown to be effective in promoting positive parenting practices and also delaying sexual initiation among youth who tend to be harder to reach, both youth and parents who tend to be harder to reach. Saving Sex for Later was then followed by the development of Especially for Daughters, which also is an audio CD set that targets females. It's culturally targeted. It was also evaluated and demonstrated in a randomized control trial to be effective in reducing girls' sex and alcohol initiation and risk-taking, and also in promoting positive parenting practices. And so the design characteristics of audio CDs, the audio CD approach to parent education that we find particularly attractive are listed here, including ease of use and the relative low cost of developing this type of intervention, and what we found to be the acceptability of this type of intervention for parents in our communities in New York City. Also want to mention briefly that the intervention is indeed guided by a theoretical model. Okay, so now for our sons. So following the development of, especially for daughters, we created For Our Sons. And For Our Sons is a set of four CDs that are gender targeted for young Black males that include dramatic role model stories to help parents support sons as sons move from 6th through 9th grades. So a bit about our methods in developing For Our Sons. We obtained input from 8 large public schools in New York City, in Queens and Brooklyn, and recruited a community advisory board of parents and school staff. And we solicited input from our community advisory board and parents throughout the formative research process. And the input was integrated both into the content, the messages, and the design of the For Our Sons CD. We also conducted focus groups with youth and their parents. In this case, for our sons, we did focus groups with parents of boys. And these parents and youth were recruited from our study participating schools. Focus groups were held in multiple rounds. So first, a series of focus groups to identify the storylines, and then focus groups to develop the scripts. Our focus groups with boys all of our focus groups in the Healthy Study Project were gender specific. And so to solicit ideas for storylines and to help refine those storylines, CAB and focus group participants were first asked open-ended questions. So for example, the parents of boys were asked, you know, what are some concerns that parents of boys have about dating and sex, and what are some things that parents can do or say to their sons to help prevent the negative consequences of sexual behavior? We also asked questions, we presented scenarios from our previous CD set, in this case, CDs that were done for daughters, and then we asked parents, you know, how might this scenario differ if that parent were talking to a boy versus a girl? And so then from that series of discussions with both the CAB and the focus groups, challenges specific to parenting sons were identified. And among these challenges were parents' perceptions that males needed less monitoring than females, and greater difficulties communicating with sons and daughters. Also, the perceptions that parents had fewer concerns about sons and sexual initiation of risks than they had about their daughters. And then there were some attitudinal barriers that sort of reinforced this perception that parents had less influence with boys than they did with girls in terms of the behaviors that we're trying to address. And then given the large number of women who are single parents in the communities that we work, there were also concerns expressed about unmet needs for positive male influences with their sons. And so based on the information that we gathered from these focus groups and from the community advisory board, role model stories were developed and refined with community input. And so specifically, the role model stories presented strategies for effective parental monitoring, provided tips on how to engage in brief chats and check-ins rather than lengthy discussions with boys, how to start these discussions and conversations about sensitive topics with boys, increasing parents' knowledge and their perceptions of negative consequences of these behavioral risks, and finally, modeling positive ways to involve non-resident fathers or males in providing these messages of what it means to be a male or a young Black male in the community. And so I wanted to share with you the covers for our Sun CD set. I also have four samples of our CDs, which I don't want to schlep back to New York with me, so if anyone wants copies of those, you're welcome. So our stories and CDs feature role model families that reflect the major segments of the population in which we work. And so the stories center around four families: the Johnsons, who are African Americans, the Bastians, who are Black Caribbeans, the Riveras, who are Latinos, and the Williams, who are also African Americans. And so the four CDs that you saw include 28 storylines that address topics such as delaying sex and alcohol use, HIV prevention, positive achievement, and peer pressure. And I wanted to share with you some of the sample storylines that are included in the CDs. And so I'll just highlight a few. There's a story in which two mothers are talking about their sons growing up, and one mom mentions her concerns about dating and sex, and the other mom says to her, you know, she's more concerned about violence, and then the other mom reminds her that it's also important to be talking to her son about delaying sex. And there's a story where a father is in a restaurant with his son, and there are some girls flirting with the son, and then the father uses that as a teachable moment to talk to his son about first coming to him with questions about relationships. And an interesting story is one in which a mother finds a website that the kid in her son's grade have posted, let's say, inappropriate photographs. And so she questions the son about it and then talks to him about the potential consequences of posting this kind of information online. Another one, the father sees the son kissing a girl on a basketball court and talks to him about the relationship, and then uses this opportunity to reinforce the importance of respect and safety. And so some preliminary feedback from parents about the CD set. One parent says that the CDs are really helpful in opening the door and talking with her son about these topics, and that sometimes they just listen without discussion, and then other times they talk about the issues while the CDs are playing, and sometimes they don't even talk about it for, you know, days after. We've also been very attentive to interjecting humor in the CDs, and so one parent says there were a couple of funny parts in the CD. It made it easy to listen to and open the conversation with my son. We've also integrated HIV prevention content into these CDs. These youth are now older, and so one parent thanks us for bringing HIV into the CD, and that she's spoken to her son about sex but didn't really know how to raise the topic of HIV, and this CD really helped to open the door for that kind of conversation. And so where we are right now with For Our Sons is that it's being evaluated as part of a randomized controlled trial. We've enrolled about 1,400 families of sixth grade boys and girls, as I mentioned, in 8 New York City public schools. You see the three study arms here, one being the CDs that are mailed to the homes of parents, an attention control condition, which is a booklet that contains similar information to what's in the CDs, and then a non-attention control condition, which is just general health promotion materials. So youth and parents are surveyed annually, and so the results will follow. Just want to, in closing, just mention that the design of this intervention sort of takes into account some of the challenges we face in doing parenting education, especially with populations in New York City, for example, that tend to be harder to reach. And so some of the features that we really like about this audio CD approach is that they have the potential to reach a large number of parents because of the limited in-person time or travel requirements for participants, limited staff time on our part in facilitating these interventions, and the ability of these CDs to be disseminated using multiple channels, both online and at home. And finally, that while this approach might be effective, it is necessary to ensure that they are developmentally appropriate, gender-specific, and culturally relevant. And so thank you. I want to acknowledge the PI of the study and the project director, and I serve as the senior research associate. Thank you, and we'll take questions after. All right.
Why don't we have all of our wonderful presenters come up and feel free to ask questions. Just address who you would like to speak with, and they can come up and we'll just switch it up. Okay. Yes.
We didn't actually ask any specific demographic information of our participants, but we do know that parents that are declining vaccinations tend to have higher education levels as well as income levels.
Detail that was the focus of another presentation, so I sort of went over. But the intervention, the brochure itself really addressed the things that we found in our focus groups, which were with the parents in the communities, that they were concerned about vaccine safety issues. They also it sort of targeted trying to answer questions about the safety of the influenza vaccine. Another big thing that the brochure itself did was it also highlighted the need for adolescents to be vaccinated against influenza. A lot of our parents were saying, well, at this point, our kids are healthy. I don't really see the need to have the vaccine. So we tried to show that even adolescents are susceptible to influenza, and that even if they're not the primary group that's most impacted if they get influenza, that within their families, that by having the vaccine, they were protecting their family members who might have more severe consequences to contracting influenza. So those were the primary focuses. And then we also talked about the different types of flu vaccine available, because some of them mentioned that my child hates shots, I don't want to get them to have a shot. And so we were really focusing on also the use of the nasal mist spray as a vaccine alternative for shots, in case kids were concerned about that and parents were concerned about that as well. So we tried to address those needs. Additionally, we provided parent stories about, because they really wanted to have examples about parents who were actually using the vaccine or who had concerns and then used the vaccine and found that it was helpful for their family. And they also provided testimonials for why they chose to use the vaccine for their children. And then we did a student component as well that consisted of a school-based skit, which was really fun to do. We got school kids involved, and we created a skit. They performed it for their school, and then we did question and answer sessions surrounding concerns, barriers, perceptions that the students were having about influenza vaccine. So that's in a paper that's been published in Health Education Research, so it describes the intervention in detail, the educational one. I'd be happy to share it with you.
Yeah, I neglected to mention that this is part of a 5-year study, and so we are following the youth into high school. So they're going to be surveyed through high school. And what I also neglected to mention is that the part of the multi-year study, which is Healthy Futures, we've developed CDs especially for daughters, so the girls get that. For our sons, this is for boys. And we've recently developed a set called Preparing for High School, which really reaches the youth as they transition to, you know, 9th and 10th grade. And so we've done annual surveys with both the parents and the youth for the entire duration of the study. So, does that answer the question? Oh, sure, yes, absolutely. I don't want to take it back to New York. Anybody else want some? Okay, good. Gone. Go ahead. Yeah, you know, so in Saving Sex for Later, we really focused, because it was fifth graders and sixth graders, we focused on delaying sex, and plus, you know, this was funded in an era where we couldn't really talk about, you know, those sort of issues. This was back in, I think, 2003 that Saving Sex for Later was developed. So in later CDs, and I think in preparing for high school, now that the youth are older, we are addressing some of these issues, and we've become even so bold as to introduce the whole concept of dare I say, condom use as a form of protection. And I joke about that, but we all know that the climate had changed at some point recently, and so we're introducing a more comprehensive approach. We also just received a supplement from NIH to address issues related to obesity, nutrition, and eating, and so we'll be developing a CD set that focuses on those issues. So yes, it is becoming more comprehensive. Thanks for asking. Go ahead. I know. Yeah, we better get with it, right? Because it's going to be obsolete soon. I would hope that we would keep up with those trends. You know, so traditionally we've sort of moved in this vein of, you know, if you all know of EDC, we've sort of developed video-based interventions like Voices and Safe in the City in the past and audio CDs. And so, yes, we are moving in that direction. And just to give you an example, we recently completed follow-up surveys with the 1,400 youth. And most of these surveys are done in the school setting, so I go in with a bundle of staff and we survey these students. And increasingly, though, we have been doing these surveys online, and so we are seeing a great response rate to our online surveys. So yes, we are indeed trying to keep up with technology and move in that direction. So. All right. Oh.
I mean, the sort of general virtue of vaccine is you don't have to protect your protected population. Helps that lets folks free ride.
Yeah, so pertussis is one situation where we've had outbreaks in Colorado. You know, measles is something, you know, we've seen in California, we've seen in other places. We haven't seen that as much here, but specifically in Colorado, pertussis is the one that, you know, kids who are unvaccinated, it's a much smaller sample, so not as many of those kids are getting it. As we know, vaccines aren't 100% effective, so some vaccinated kids are also getting pertussis. But their likelihood of getting pertussis is much greater than those who are vaccinating their kids. So, yeah, does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah? The parents who were absolutely against vaccination, mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's where that idea of the evolving decision-making process came out, where we've, you know, a lot of times our providers and past research has called this group, you know, the lost cause. There's nothing we can really say or do for them. But we found that maybe they aren't lost. They are, it is something that they didn't just make their decision and they're done. They're still thinking about it constantly and still worrying about it. what we're trying to grapple with now is there a way that the providers can work with them? Or that's actually why we're building this social media website, because we think the best source is actually going to be something kind of outside of that relationship that they have with their provider, until we can find a way to build trust within that relationship. So that's where the social media website really is going to come in and give an opportunity for those parents to, you know, they can ask tough questions on there and be anonymous. So, you know, it's not like when you're sitting in your provider's office and saying, you get paid by pharmaceutical companies, don't you? I mean, they are. When we talk to our providers, they had no idea that parents thought that about them, because the parents are—they're not going to confront their doctor like that. That's an uncomfortable situation. So, this social media network is an opportunity for them to say some of those things, and for us to clear some of those things up with them that they have these, you know, wrong ideas about.
Any other questions?
So am I supposed to ask a question?
Absolutely.
Right, so I'm a parent of a 5-year-old, uh-huh. And so this discussion about vaccination is really interesting. So I'm wondering if you all have found a way to sort of address some of the cultural beliefs and barriers or practices that, you know, ethnic minority families tend to use in combination with the sort of interventions that you all are doing?
Yeah, and honestly, you know, we do find, and Jessica and I were talking about this earlier too, that, because she's worked a lot more with the African-American community, most of our delayers and decliners are in the white population and in our group here in Colorado. So we didn't look specifically at kind of those cultural differences, because they tended to be similar in their beliefs. But I think there are some differences that you definitely have to address with different cultures, and specifically, you know, in rural areas where, like Jessica was talking about, I think it's really important for us to look into those things and address it differently. You know, a social media website may not work for that group. You may have to take a totally different approach. For our particular population, we think that that's going to be the best approach, but I agree that there are definitely some different things that you need to consider with other groups.
Anything else? Thank you all for coming.